Hello and welcome to Monday Morning Moments, a weekly podcast to encourage, challenge, and motivate you to maximize moments in your life. I'm your host, Mike Van Hooser. I've been working on a book project for the last year about moments, which will be coming out in the fall. The premise of this book is to inspire people to make the most of the moments of their life. In the book, I tell stories that relate to different moments that we experience in life, such as defining moments, or valley moments, or courageous moments, just to name a few. Through these stories, you will learn how people in all different walks of life have made their lives count for what matters most, no matter what the circumstances were. I also offer 5 keys to maximizing the moments in your life. Today's podcast highlights one of the stories that will appear in my book. I was so excited when I received the confirmation from this person that he wanted to be a part of the Moments Project. I've appreciated the work of this person for a long time, but as I've grown to know him and learn more about his story, I've admired more the person he has become. I think you're going to be very blessed by this podcast interview with Ernie Johnson, a dedicated father and husband, and a 3-time Emmy winner and host of Inside the NBA on TNT. Ernie is a cancer survivor who underwent treatment for non-Hodgkin's follicular lymphoma last year. We pick up the interview in progress as he is telling me about the initial discovery of a tumor on the side of his face.
You know, then lose control over that side of your face or something like that. And so I said, yeah, that's a concern. And but that was really the extent of the concern at that point. And it wasn't really till I went to Emory University over at the Winship Cancer Institute, and that's where they tested it and said, no, that's non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And so, then you're thinking is, in a totally different direction. And and I remember it was my wedding anniversary, and that was the day of the second opinion, and I went in there and I spent most of the day there, I guess, several hours, and I remember they stuck a needle in the side of my face to take a sample out of there, and the woman who had done it, the doctor who did that, had said, well, we'll get you in and out of here and we'll let you go celebrate your anniversary. And my wife was working that day and, in fact, had some stuff to do that night, too, so it was going to be a pretty low-key anniversary anyway. And then I just remember she came back into the doctor came back into the room and just said, well, this isn't what we think it is. And I said, this looks an awful lot like lymphocytes, meaning cancer, and she said, we'll have to test it, but that's what it looks like to me. And so I pretty much knew when I left the doctor's office that day what was up, but really didn't talk about it with my wife until the next night when the doctor called back and said, yeah, that's what it is. And so, yeah, that's one of those, that moment, because he called like 7:30 or so. We were just finishing dinner, and I went in the other room to pick the call. And I just remember him telling me that and having about a 20-25 minute phone call with him. And then it was strange because my son was home from college, and he came into the room after I'd hung up, and he said, hey, we're going down to Blockbuster to get a movie. What should I get? I said, I'll get something funny. And he and my daughter walked out to do that, and then my wife came up from the other room and said, was that Emory? I said, yeah. And I said, and it's not what we think. And that was just that, it was just that moment right there where you just, wow, you can't really describe it. It's just, that reality kind of hits, and not just reality, then it's all that uncertainty of what does this mean, and what's next, and how bad, and all that. So, that was kind of the way it all started.
And that was what month was that in 2003?
Well, the day that I was in there for the test was August 21st of 2003.
Okay.
And so I got the call back on August 22nd, Friday, and then you're in a situation of he says, well, look, we'll call you instead of what we need to do next. And so then within the next, week or so, you're in there. And then, that that first appointment is, let's do this scan, let's do that scan, drink this stuff, get in this machine, and now we need bone marrow, and lay on the table, and they take the bone marrow out of your back, and that's fun. But, you know, the whole time you're sitting here, you know, my wife and I, when we went in that morning, we're sitting here in this will be your financial advisor for your treatments and stuff. And so we're sitting here and saying, I can't believe we're sitting here. We kept looking at each other. When the woman walked out of the room, we're saying, can you believe we're sitting here doing this and filling out this paperwork? This is unbelievable. And then you spend your day doing the tests and all that just to see exactly, you know, where else it might be, or, you know, is it early, and then, you know, all that stuff, and basically you're just kind of going from one station to the next and saying, okay, and then waiting on phone calls, you know, and
right.
And that's the tough, you know, when you go out and do that, and they say, well, in the next couple of days we'll call you and let you know what we found, and so that was kind of the procedure there.
As a husband and as a father, and you talked about that night at, you know, where your son was wanting to rent a movie and he's home from college, you know, what were you thinking and how were you feeling and how did you communicate with your family about that? Obviously, probably you communicated more to your wife immediately and she knew exactly what was going on, but what were you thinking and feeling and what did you say?
Well, I mean, that night it was just my wife and I. We're the only ones who discussed it. You know, they came back from the movie store, we popped the movie in and we watched it. And then my wife and I discussed, okay, how are we going to address this with the kids? Because, you know, I had told them earlier when we thought it was going to be this benign tumor that might need some surgery, that, you know, this is, because they knew I was going through with something, but we certainly didn't think it was cancerous. And so, you know, my wife and I were just kind of saying, okay, so where do we go next with the kids? And I think the decision then was, let's wait until we have these tests this week and we have something definitive from the doctor. And then we can, you know, rather than just tell them, oh, here's what it is, and have them all concerned, let's wait a few days. Let's get, you know, let's get the test done, and let's see what the doctor says, and see what kind of prognosis he has, and then we'll sit the kids down, and we'll talk about it. And that's really the way we handled it, because after all the tests and everything, and they said, well, this is what it is. It's follicular non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and it's not, you know, it's, there are several different kinds of non-Hodgkin's, and this is a not an aggressive, you know, there are more aggressive forms, and this is not, and it's, you know, it's kind of there, and it's, but it's not aggressive, and so when we talked to him at that point, the doctor said, look, a lot of times what we do here is we watch and wait, you know, and we have you in every 3 or 4 months, and we'll take blood, and we'll see if there is swelling anywhere else, and we'll do some scans from time to time, and there's no real need, you know, to start a treatment right now. So that's, you know, so once we knew that in the first couple of weeks, then it was, you know, okay, let's sit the kids down and tell them what's going on.
Right.
So that was, you know, that's how that played out.
How did that moment change your life, or did it? How did it have an effect on your life and how you lived your life from that moment on? Was it any kind of turning point, any kind of defining moment?
From the moment of the cancer diagnosis?
Yeah, exactly.
Or from a moment of telling the kids?
Well, either.
Was there the cancer moment?
Yes.
I don't think that it really changed my outlook at all. I mean, I think my outlook basically had changed 6 years before that. I mean, I rededicated my life to Jesus Christ on December 10th of 1997, you know, and I think that was a defining moment of my life when I was 41 years old. that I kind of realized that the world didn't revolve around me and my job and that kind of thing, and that there was more to it than I was allowing to happen. And I really kind of turned to a Christ-centered rather than a me-centered life. And I think when that happens, then something like this comes up, and it really doesn't change the way you view your life. You know, that's already happened, and I have no doubts that I don't have any doubts that God was preparing me for this kind of a, not for this specifically, but for whatever comes up,
right.
Good or bad. And I, because I've looked at my professional life and my personal life, and I've, when I look at this, I'm saying, you know, at a high point in your life, maybe professionally, like winning an Emmy or something like that, I think he's preparing me for that too, to know who gets the glory there, and that it's not about how great a guy I am or anything like that. And then at the same time, from those, you know, mountaintop or treetop moments, and you go into these valleys of cancer and that kind of thing, and I think you're just he's preparing for me to deal with that too.
Right.
And just and basically just a trust God period kind of a feeling. That's really, those really have been the three words that have kind of laid the foundation for how I've dealt with the good and the bad in whatever happens in my life. That he's got a plan. It's a lot bigger than mine. It's a lot better than mine. I don't always understand it, but I'm going to trust him. And if I'm going to trust him in these really good times, I'm going to trust him in those valley times too.
Amen. That's great. And I really like that mantra that you have, a trust God period. What was the context for that defining moment and, you know, really committing to Jesus Christ in 97? What was happening that led you to that point?
I think it was really just, we had gotten to a point where we were, had kind of given up on church and that kind of thing, and had excuse me, Cheryl, my wife, and she and I had kind of said, look, we got four kids. We had two, we adopted two, and so we've got a hand. So one of the kids we adopted is, got muscular dystrophy, Michael. We adopted him from Romania in 91, and so it's 97, and we're kind of like, we really need to give the kids some foundation. I mean, by this point, our oldest is 13 years old, and so we've got them from 4 to 14 at that point in age, four kids, and we're just kind of like, these kids need some spiritual grounding. We need to, you know, get them back. You know, we've tried a few churches. Let's try again. Let's, you know, and it's funny the way that works, because I, you know, we try this church called Crossroads Community Church, a non-denominational church in Lawrenceville, Georgia, because a couple of people had mentioned it to us, and it was funny. And I hate to digress a whole bunch, but it's at that point, my wife was, kind of a hobby of hers kind of turned into a job, and she was making curtains for people and that kind of thing, because she was got a talent for doing that. And so she said,
right,
you know, I'm doing this as a favor for a lot of people. I'm going to start, you know, kind of doing it full time. And so one of the people she was doing curtains for asked her one day where she goes to church. And she said, well, we really don't. And we have a handicapped child, and it's kind of hard for people to watch after him, you know, in the kiddie area or whatever you want to call it, in the child care. And she said, well, I'm in charge of that at Crossroads. Why don't you come, and I'll watch after Michael. I know he's in a wheelchair. I know he doesn't get around real well. And he wasn't really in a chair. He just didn't walk well, and he doesn't communicate at all. And so it's like, okay, we'll try it. And, I mean, from the first day, and this is in the fall of 97, I'm like, this pastor, Kevin Myers, who's about my age and has three or four kids, and he's asking all these questions about who the provider is in your family, and are you in search of happiness or wholeness, and I looked at my wife. I said, who gave this guy my file? I said, I mean, I'm being convicted left and right every time I hear this. And so after going there for 2 or 3 months, he and I went out and had lunch one day, and we were just talking about where my life was headed. And I told him, I said, I think God's messing with me. And I said, because I'm seeing a lot of different things here that I didn't see before, and seeing a different purpose for my life, and seeing that it's not all about me. And I prayed right then to receive Jesus Christ at lunch at this O'Charlie's restaurant in Lawrenceville. And really, that was it was the life-changing moment for me, that I kind of got away from this me world and really was more about what's God got for me and what is, and really that was the foundation for it.
That's excellent. And, it's interesting how God works in our lives and how he sends people in different experiences in our lives and kind of the context for that. So it seems like that really came true for you. And that's a moment that you look back to and really remember as a defining moment, kind of how you've transformed.
Oh, for sure. I mean, there just comes a realization sometimes, despite what outwardly you seem to have, this great job and the great family and everything like this. And I think I was just missing out on a whole lot more. I was just kind of looking at what made me happy and what satisfied me, and it was always me, and I think it just opened my eyes to what God had for me.
Right. And recently somebody shared with me about the words ability versus availability, and how God is much more interested in our availability than he is in our ability. Of course, if you kind of really think about that, he gave us any ability as, and any ability that he's counting on us is really through Jesus Christ in us anyway. But in areas that we have talent, and I'm just digressing a little bit, I just spent Friday with the Astros, and we talked about that, about, in the areas that we have talent or think we have the talent or ability, those are the avenues and the areas that we're usually going to guard and say, we don't really need you in this area. But when we really get real with God, it's that availability and giving everything to him.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I think what I saw too through this was, when you look at your life, and for a lot of times, I think I looked at my life as having all these segments in it, and one part of it would be the spiritual part of your life, and now here's my work part, here's my family part, and really not, it was one of those things that Kevin Myers described to me also, is just really that spiritual slice or that spiritual side that you think you had, or that spiritual section, is actually just the crust of that whole pie, that everything you do revolves around that, and part of your spiritual and your relationship with Jesus Christ is part of everything you do in your life. And that was really an eye-opener for me too, because it meant that every decision I made personally and professionally, it was a God-centered thing. And so I think that was huge. It wasn't one of these things where, hey, good, I'm glad you found some peace, and I'm glad you found God, and now you can compartmentalize that over here and go to it on Sundays or Tuesdays or when you're not feeling good.
Right.
And I straightened people out and I said, no, that's not it. I said, this is the whole foundation. There's not a part of my life that doesn't have God in it.
Right. That's great. How have you found that to come true in every area of your life where you don't compartmentalize it, and you take it into your work setting, your community, the things that you're involved in that people may not label as spiritual, but you're just kind of living your life and it's a testimony to those around you and they know where you stand? How have you been able to do that? Because sometimes people have trouble with that. A lot of people that I see in the corporate world, don't necessarily know how to do that, and they deal with the compartmentalization a lot of times. So how have you found that's how have you tried to live that out in other areas of your life?
Well, I tell you, Mike, it's funny because, I can look back at these last 10 years or so, it'll be 10 years in December for me, and it's really funny. I mean, there were a few episodes or a few, incidents. I remember the first time I walked into a Christian bookstore, And I was like, man, I need to put on a phony nose and glasses and before I go in here. I said, I don't want anybody to see me in here. And, you know, because they're going to, hey, there's the guy from TV. What's he doing in here? And, you know, when I'm in there and I'm kind of, you know, it was the same as, you know, when you first walk into a Victoria's Secret with, you know, to get a birthday present or something, you know, look for some pajamas or something. And the deeper you get into the store, the more you start sweating, you know. And it's like,
right.
Like, the deeper I got into this family Christian store, I was like, man, should I really be in here? What am I looking for? And it was really just kind of an exploratory. What's the store all about?
Right.
Looking for maybe some music and that kind of thing. And then I can remember sitting there for like 10 minutes outside, deciding whether I was going to put a fish on my car. I was standing out in a lot of the Gwinnett Place Mall in Duluth, Georgia, with this fish in my hand, and I'm saying, "Are you really going to put this on your car?
Right?
Are you really going to do this?" And I mean, it was just. I look back now, and it's so silly, but at that moment, it was just like, hey, look, are you going to go public with this?
Right.
Hey, are you going to, you know, are you going to make this statement to people when you drive into work? And it was the same way. I was out, again, another story. I'm out at Sahali Country Club for media day before they play the 98 PGA Championship out there, which we televise. And so on media day, you go out and you get a chance to play the course like, I don't know, 3 months before the tournament. And I had a WWJD bracelet with me, and I picked it up at a family Christian store up before
right.
my way to the airport. And I'm standing there in my hotel room, about to go down to breakfast and meet all these guys to go over to the course. And I put it on, and I get on the elevator and get down to the lobby, and everybody's kind of standing around with their clubs ready to load up. And I turn around and I took it off.
Mm.
And I said, I'm not going to walk up and I couldn't. And it was one of those things where I said, are you ready to let people know that this is where your life is? And I was like, I turned around and I took it off. And then I put it back on.
Mm.
And I was like, I went over and saw these guys and was hanging out with them and playing golf with them. And I was so conscious of the fact that anytime I'd, you know, shake hands with somebody and I'd see if they were looking. I was like, is he? And then eventually that passes. Eventually it becomes your life.
Right.
You know, then any of that stuff, you know, you're just so self-conscious, and it's just such a weird phenomenon. And because people want to say, well, I remember Ernie as being the guy who would do this and this and this.
Sure.
Or I didn't ever know he was, you know, religious or anything, you know, whatever terms people want to use. And I can recall also at the PGA Championship the next year, you know, and by this time I'm wearing this all the time and never taking it off, and Payne Stewart comes up to the booth at the 99 PGA Championship. He'd played early on the weekend. We had on the Saturday and Sunday, we had like an hour and a half show before CBS would come on with third and final round coverage. And Payne played early and was finished and came up for the last 20 minutes of our show with me and Bobby Clampett, just to talk about the course and how it's playing and what he expected of the weekend and that kind of thing. And I thank him for being with us, and I go into this closing sequence of coming up next on TNT, it's this and this and this and this,
right.
And it's all off camera with these graphics on the screen, and I feel a tug on my coat, on my cuff, and Payne is grabbing a hold of my WWJD bracelet. It's got like a finger underneath it like this, and I look at him, and he's kind of giving me a thumbs up.
That's great.
Yeah, and so it was, it's a funny journey. I'm sure sometimes God's up there just laughing.
Yeah.
I'm sure sometimes he just says, look at you. Look what you're stressing over. Look at the, you know, or part of it's like, hey, this is part of it. You're going to, you know, it's, you know, when you decide to, if you're going to wear the emblem, if you're going to take a public stand, you know, this is part of it. That, you know, when you're kind of out there in the public or as a public figure, that, you know, then that's, you know, I think it's a little bit different sometimes because of that. That, you know, you're recognized, and I'm certainly not like, you know, I don't want to overblow that, but yeah, I mean, you go to places and people recognize you from TV and that kind of thing, and you know, you're making a statement, and I guess it, you know, at times it's a little uncomfortable to make that statement, but it's what you know you have to do.
Exactly. Reminded of Jesus saying, if you acknowledge me before men, I'll acknowledge you before my Father, you know, kind of thing. And so, and that's great that he sent some, that's a little encouragement along the way from Payne Stewart, you know, just saying, giving you the thumbs up, saying, keep going this way.
Yeah, exactly.
you know, it's interesting that you mentioned that as far as a defining moment, what that's meant to you. I had heard a story about your compass and that your wife gave you, and if you could tell me a little bit about that and when that happened in relationship to your accepting Christ and what that's meant to you as far as the gift that she gave to you.
Yeah, well, that was a few years ago, probably 3 years ago, and because she always gives me something on December 10th for my spiritual birthday, and I had worked late that night. It was, it was like 3 years ago, and I had worked late doing an NBA thing that Thursday night, and when that happens, you know, I'm not getting home till about 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm in the studio in Atlanta, but it's, you know, we get off the air at 2, and I drive home and get in the bed at 3 o'clock, and she lets me sleep in. And when I woke up, you know, it's 10:30 or so in the morning, I go out in the kitchen, and there's just a little box and a note attached to it that says, "Remembering the day you found your way." And I was like, "Wow!" And I open it up, and it's this beautiful compass. And you know, I'm not a big outdoors guy. I'm not going to be out using the compass, but it sits there on my dresser, and it was just such a sweet thing. And the thought that she put into that. To remember that day on December 10th of 97 really was the day that I found my way, and for her to put it that way and just have that out there was really cool. So that's I treasure that. I really, really do. I mean, it's one of my favorite stories. It was such a great way to wake up and kind of, you know, groggy and walk out there and, "Well, look at this. Oh, good, she remembered." And, oh, man, I was just moved beyond words.
That'll wake you up in the morning and help confirm your purpose and the highest and best use of yourself that day.
Oh, without question. I mean, and you know, and it sits out there because I look at it every day. Every day,
right.
I'm getting ready, and I, you know, it's over there by, it's on my dresser, so I can't help but, you know, go over there to pick stuff up and look at it and see it. It really is. That's what it's all about.
That's great. Let me ask you a couple more questions. Ralph Waldo Emerson, it's a favorite quote of mine, used to greet his friends and say, "What has become clear to you since we last met? And, you know, what experiences you've been having, what have you learned from those, and what is the call to action in your life?" If you were to think about, especially over the last year where you've gone through at least 7 rounds, I think, of chemotherapy. I know it may have been more. But
it was 6 rounds.
Six,
yeah.
Rounds, okay. So in going through the last year, as you think about that question, what would you say kind of resonates, rises to the top as far as what has become clear to you in the last year?
I lost you for just a second. Go ahead.
How would you answer that question? What has become clear to you since we last met? Basically, in the last year, what has really become clear to you as far as what God is showing you through the experiences you've gone through in the last year?
Well, I think that, I mean, again, it goes back to the trust God period, and this is going to be kind of a long answer, but I'll explain it, and really we'll get around to answering the question. Because when, after my diagnosis, Kevin Myers, the pastor, again, he's the guy who prayed with me at the O'Charlie's restaurant, and we've, you know, been very good friends over the last 9 or 10 years, and he and I sat down, you know, at a Starbucks after all this happened, just said, you know, and I was like, so what do I make of this, Kevin? You know, is this a, you know, I'm not going to get into a big why me thing, but so is this a punishment or is this a what? You know, am I, how does this work? How does God work on something like this? You know, does God say this is, let this happen? Does God, you know, I had a lot of these questions. And, you know, we talked about, you know, where we landed the plane basically was trust God, period. I still have the Starbucks napkin that has the notes written down that he was writing as we were sitting there. Not trust God if this test comes back the way I want it to, or not trust God if the doctor says this, but trust God, period. That he's, you know, that, you know, are you going to trust him? Are you going to trust him in the good times? Are you going to trust him in the bad times? And yeah, we are. And so, excuse me, I'm sorry. I haven't talked this much in a long time. So I think, you know, by kind of being in, I've been resting very comfortably in that notion since 03, I think that I have seen over the past few years just how even out of situations like this, God works for good. You know, it really does bring home to me, is Romans 8:28, isn't it? God, for those who believe in Him, you know, God works to the good, and
right.
and I think that's where I've seen, I guess, you know, speaking to groups about what this is and about how I've gotten through it, the reaction I've gotten from some people who have said that it impacted them, that through all this God was getting the glory, and that I was, you know, that he would be glorified through this. And I think that's what's, you know, I've kind of had my eyes open to that side of it, because, you know, I've looked at Job, you know, I've looked at how the only way, you know, God allowed all of this to happen, you know, God was like, have you considered my, you know, my servant Job, you know, before Satan did anything, just don't kill him, but he's not going to turn his back on me.
Right.
And I've looked at John 9 and the, you know, the blind guy on the side of the road, and I look at the disciples asking Jesus, who sinned? Was it him or was it his parents, you know, that he's blind? And Jesus basically is saying, you're asking the wrong question. It's not why did this happen, but how my father is going to use it. And so I think that's where my eyes have been opened to, that, yeah, this is not something I would have chosen for my life, but it's also through this and having this as part of my Christian testimony has impacted some people. Mm. And not because I'm any good, but because God does remarkable things through just ordinary people.
Right.
And I think that's how, and I think, you know, that probably doesn't happen if I don't have the perspective that I have from December of 97. I mean, this past year in Las Vegas, we had an all-star breakfast that, you know, Athletes in Action and NAIA kind of put it together. And they've done two of them now. They did one in Houston, and they did this one in Las Vegas this year. And, you know, I emcee the thing, and I'm... they asked me, you know, would you deliver the gospel at the end of the morning? And I said, sure, I'd be honored to do that. And you know, I was kind of like mulling this. I had all this work to do All Star Week, you know, during the NBA, and
sure.
And I'm kind of at the same time in my mind the whole time is, you need to make time to sit down and lay out how you're going to present the gospel to these people on Saturday morning. And I thought I pretty much had it down the way I was going to do it. And like 8:45, the breakfast starts at 9:00 in the morning. And it, like at 8:45, as I'm kind of just going through my final notes, it's almost like God just said, "Here's the way you do it." So suddenly, this thing, you know, I changed direction on it, and it was just like, "Look how this works." And I was really, you know, I was amazed because it just, you know, it tied in you know, what I've recently been through with the chemo and everything, just into the decision that I made 10 years ago and how I was able to deal with a cancer diagnosis and treatment all stemmed from the decision I made back in 1997, and, you know, and that led me into offering that decision or that chance to make that same decision to the people who were there. And in fact, that thing's on YouTube somewhere.
Everything's on YouTube, isn't it?
Ridiculous. I mean, somebody said, "Hey, I saw your Las Vegas speech on YouTube." I said, "Really?" And so it's like, I said, "Sure, I'll get on there," and she watched it, and it was like, anything that I can say to you on the phone is probably not as, doesn't say it as clearly as I said it in that room that morning. So if you,
I'll take a look at that and see it. Yeah, and you know, it's interesting to me that there have been key moments, and you have remembered, you know, the dates, but you've remembered key moments that have made an impact in your life, and you've described, you know, a moment in 97 and not knowing what the future was going to hold and how that was going to impact you. And then you fast forward to 2003 and, you know, 2006 and some of the things that you've gone through in the last year. And you go back to that moment and see, I know what you were doing and how you prepared me for maybe a valley moment to carry me through that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's, and I, you know, I've told people that too. I said, I have no doubt that the decision I made that day, God was preparing me for the good and the bad, and just saying, hey, just know where the credit lies here, and don't get carried away with it. Because believe the old me, you know, if I won an Emmy Award, that would have been fuel on the fire. And,
right.
You know, if that was a pre-97 deal,
right,
that just would have made it, that would have made things worse. But to be able to win a couple in the last 5 years, and it's like, you know, and you know what? This past year, when I won the studio host Emmy in New York,
right?
And you know what? I know that because I went through the cancer, I know the people who vote. That's probably a huge reason that they voted me that thing. But you know what? It was also, it's also an opportunity. That's one of those things where God says, well, I don't want to say God says, I hate it when people say, well, God, yeah. But what, you know what? That's an opportunity where I'm going to be able to make a speech in front of a bunch of my peers in broadcasting at this theater in New York. And now, am I going to shy away? Am I going to take the bracelet off? You know, am I going to put the phony nose and glasses on and walk into the thing, or am I going to be genuine? And am I going to tell them the way it is in my life? And so, you know what? That's one of those moments where, you know, and I did. I went up and I said, look, this has been a tough year, et cetera. I described some of that, and I said, but, the only way I've gotten through this, I said, is through my faith in Jesus Christ and trusting God. And I said, because his hand has been on my shoulder the entire time, and I said, and sometimes he whispers and sometimes he shouts it at me, but he's telling his plan for us and is so much better than anything I can come up with. And that's one of those moments where, you know, I could never have seen myself before 1997. I could never have seen myself saying that in front of a group of broadcasters,
right?
People who work in my business, and it's just, no, that's one of those God things too.
Exactly.
You know, that's, you know, he gives me platforms because of what I do. You know, we're all here for some reason, and that, you know, I've thought at times, you know, but once you, hey, you know, should I be working somewhere else? Should I be doing something that's more Christian oriented? You know, that those kind of thoughts go into your head after you make a decision like I made in 97, where you kind of change your life around. And then it's like God uses people in every walk of life. You know, God needs guys everywhere to do his work and to be Jesus to somebody in their life. And so, you know, you go from cancer to an Emmy Award, and you pull the two together in front of a group and say, there's no way I do this without Jesus Christ. And you know what? And you do it without batting an eye. You do it because that's the way it is, because that's your life. Yeah? And to see that kind of a change from, oh, should I wear this bracelet in front of the guys?
Yep.
Proclaiming, and you know what? And Mark Jackson, the point guard, the old point guard
right.
for the Knicks and,
right.
and numerous other teams, and he does games on ABC now. You know, Mark, am I ringing a bell with Mark Jackson? You know him?
Yes, I do know him. Yeah. I watched Mark, play through the 80s and 90s, I guess. So, yep.
Yeah, and he's there that night. And then I got a call on my cell phone later that night. He leaves a message. Said, hey, my wife and I were just, we were leaving the theater. We were talking about the night and how thrilled we were that at the end of the night, the last award presented was to you, and you finish off the night by giving God the glory and calling him by his name. And I was just,
wow.
I was just, you just hear that and you're like, man, that is such encouragement from him. It was just a cool night. It's just, again, one of those things where you don't always put the pieces together in your life or why this happened or why this happened or why this happened, but I know that all those dominoes start falling in place once you surrender it all and say, it's not about me, it's about you. And then you look back to that date in 97, and you look what happens next and what happens next, and why did this happen? Oh, well, look what, and it's kind of a glorious kind of a chaotic mixture that you just kind of sit back sometimes and say, man, it's fun just watching God be God.
Right, exactly. Well, Jeremiah 29:11 through 13 are some of my favorite verses about him knowing the plans he has for us, and that, basically that we were created for a reason and plans to prosper us and not to harm us. And, that coupled with Ephesians 3:20, where it talks about that he wants to do immeasurably more than we could ever dream up or imagine in our best laid plans, all for the glory of Jesus Christ.
Exactly.
And that's basically what you're saying, is that in your best laid plans, he's wanting to do more, even in that moment where you're preparing your testimony, and he says, wait, I've got a different way, about 15 minutes before you go on.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I think that's...
tap on the shoulder and say, hey, try this.
Yeah.
Yeah. That works.
Exactly. And I think that question you mentioned about struggling with, should I be doing something differently? Yes, I'm doing something successful as a broadcaster, but is that really making an impact, or do I need to do something in full-time Christian ministry? And a lot of people struggle with it. I know in my professional career, 1 or 2 years into it, I did. And I had some friends who were some communicators reaching out to college campuses for Jesus. And I had my college roommate who was a full-time Campus Crusade staff on college campuses making an impact and touring the world. And I thought, what I'm doing day in and day out isn't making a difference. And it was an interesting conversation, a defining moment where he said, you're reaching people that I could never reach. And you're going into places that they wouldn't let me in. But you're in there for a reason, and God has a purpose for you. And the same is true with you and the people that you interface with, the athletes, with probably the people you work with at Turner as well. You're there for a reason, and he's going to continue to bring that purpose even more clearly to you every day.
Yeah, and I think that's, again, where the availability comes in, that you bring up availability and obedience.
Right.
And part of it is just, live your life the way you say you live your life now, okay? If that's because you don't know, again, you don't know the impact, you don't know who's affected, and I don't think you need to know. As long as you're truthful to the stand that you're making, and I think you just by living your life, sometimes you might impact somebody. What quote did I see the other day? Somebody who just said that we're planting sequoias.
Mm.
I thought about that, and I said, yeah, I mean, sequoias take forever, and you'll never see the result.
Right.
And that's not necessary. You don't need to see the result. You just need to be there and be available. And I think you can't try too hard. I don't think you can go into it that way saying, oh, I'm really going to make a mark today. I'm really going to. All you can do is live your life,
right,
and live it the way that now you've decided to live it and have it Christ centered. I mean, people ask me, how you doing today? And I say, I'm blessed beyond recognition. Mm. And I don't even recognize that other guy.
Right. Right. Well, final question I'd have for you, Ernie, and any other thoughts that you'd have, but if you were thinking about advice that you would give to people who are desiring to make most of the moments in their life and to really think about this, and some people probably are in a valley right now, some people may be at the top of their game, you know, as the world defines that, and success, and everybody in between. And also this concept of wholeness, as we've talked about that, you know, people not compartmentalizing their lives or having success in one area of their life at the expense of the other. What advice would you give to people as far as making the most of the moments of your life?
Oh, boy.
That's a big question, I know, and a lot of depth to it. But
that's a big question. Yeah. I think the simple answer is seek the truth. And by that I mean that's something that I did back in 97. What am I looking for? Am I living a charade? Am I hiding kind of behind this facade of I'm a successful person, or I'm a happily married man, or I'm a great dad, or are you trying to put on the image of that? What is the truth? And I think when you get through that, you can fight kind of through maybe some of the barriers that you yourself have built up and kind of hid behind. I think it's a very freeing thing, and I think that's what enabled me to surrender it all to Jesus Christ. I don't want to live that way anymore, like everything is great and like I'm totally satisfied and that I've got it all together. I don't. And I think in that search for truth, that led me to Crossroads, and that led me into the Word for the first time in ages and ages and ages, and that really just that search for truth led me to who I really am, and that's a child of God.
That's great. Well, I appreciate your time, Ernie, and you've shared some great things about what God is teaching you and really speaking you through this, and it's been a blessing to me to spend some time with you, and I really appreciate, you know, what you shared today.
Mine, man.
If I can be an encouragement to you, you know, just, you know, I will definitely do that, and anything I can do for you, let me know. And I just say, you know, it's been interesting to me over the last couple of years as people are in different parts of culture and impacting culture for Christ, and that's what I was at that conference in Atlanta a couple of weeks ago, and just thinking about that, and just like you said, living your life, living a life that's a faithful life to the calling that God's given you, and you're doing that, and so just keep doing that and doing it with excellence, and you know, we'll be praying for you and your family. I know your son Michael has muscular dystrophy, and is he doing well? How's he doing?
Yeah, he's hanging in there. He's doing well. Just graduated from high school. And,
oh, wow. That's great.
Actually I missed game two of the Eastern Conference Finals in Detroit to come back to Atlanta for that. And it was a great night. Just very, very cool.
That's great. And like I said, let's just stay in touch, Ernie. I appreciate your time. Okay, thank you so much.
No sweat, Mike. Thanks, man.
Take care. Bye-bye.